time to tell me your story, new paradigms for a new world. Giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. And we stream live at those times, as well as we have podcasts, and they are available not only at the radio show's page of richarddugan.com, SoundCloud, iTunes, Spotify, Switcher. I said Spotify. TuneIn Radio is now. We're there as well, and we're expanding. So we'll try to keep you posted on all of those locations where you can continue to hear this program and also introduce other folks to it as well. We also link to our guest's website. We'll give that to you shortly so that you can get more information, follow up, and so forth. And if you'd like to support this radio broadcast, we can use all the support that we can get. We have a podcast link to allow you to do so. Just a reminder, we are not nonprofit. It is not tax deductible, and I do not want to get in trouble with the IRS. So there you go. With all of that said, I want to welcome back to our program. It has been quite a long time. Good friend as well, who actually we, how do you put this? We cat sat for her many, many years ago. Andrea Hayden is our guest with a website, Heal My Voice. Is it healmyvoice.com?
Yes.
And we encourage folks to go there. It's well good to have you not only back on the program, but it's good to see you again. It's been a long time.
I know. It's crazy. And we've talked about doing a show in between, I think it was 8 or 9 years ago did the show, which is just crazy. I'm sure listeners feel that too, how time flies.
Ordinarily, I'd say you're making me feel old. No, you're just making me feel tired. 10 years. Lord,
well,
have
so
mercy.
Much has happened. There's been so much that we've both been creating in different ways.
No, I've created nothing. It's all been happening to me.
Yeah.
That is, folks, that is the voice of the victim.
Yes,
okay?
That is.
That and is. That isn't where you live anymore.
That isn't where I live. I don't know that I've ever really, well, no, that's not true. I would say that I haven't lived in the voice of the victim since I left my first marriage. And it was that experience, which did involve trauma and loss, that showed me that I could actually make a different choice in the moment. Now, let me just clarify that. I have had many, many days where I've been down on my knees sobbing and asking, God, why me? But that's not where I live. Mm. That is a blip. That is an acknowledging that I have feelings. That is an opportunity to feel everything and then reach a place where it's like, okay, that's enough crying for now, or that's enough self-pity for now. What do I want to do with this? Where are the gifts? What can I learn while I'm in this situation? And that really is how I live my life and how I started Heal My Voice.
Well, in terms of that, we have a major movement, actually several in this country now, that are kind of doing the same kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You might say they've had it up to here. They're not going to take it anymore, as the line from the movie Network says. Mad as hell, and we're not going to take it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I was interviewing a woman from India several months ago, and she had written a book along these lines. It was a fictional story, but it dealt with a lot of these issues, specifically around women. And I said to her, I said, well, you know, it's real interesting because I know that for myself, and I'm sure there are other men who feel the same way, they're walking around scared because they don't want to get near the equivalent of a hand grenade, because they don't know when it's going to go off. If they look at a woman wrong, if they glance, if they gesture, if they do anything that is absolutely not, even directed, but the woman may perceive it as so, and the grenade goes off, and they get hit with the shrapnel. And I said, you know, I'm walking around afraid. To which she responded, and I guess rightly so, welcome to the club, with a lot of attitude. And the one thing that troubles me about all of this, not to say that women, specifically in this case, don't have a right to speak up and speak out, but it's like we've got enough of a divide amongst different sectors of our population, and now we've got one between the genders. And do you see that in your experience, in the work that you're doing, that there is a way for women to speak up and speak out and say, I'm Mattis Ellen, I'm not going to take it anymore, without at the same time inflicting more shrapnel on those that they, the other half of the other gender, some who haven't, I didn't do anything wrong. Why am I being attacked? You know, kind of thing. And at the same time, I grew up with four sisters and a mother. God forbid that any of them have ever had this experience, of being disrespected, mistreated, et cetera, et cetera. Share with me that whole dynamic, if you can. I know that's a lot. I realize that's huge. But can you address that a little bit?
Well, it's a huge topic, and as I'm listening to you, I'm kind of filtering through all of my life experiences and having worked with 200 women who've written stories in Heal My Voice before the Me Too movement. And so, first of all, I see men as allies. I have always seen men as allies, and when I started Heal My Voice and I was focusing on women and women's stories, I focused on women because I'm a woman, I've raised three daughters, I've been a Girl Scout leader, like I understood women. And so I wanted to give them a place to speak their voice. So I don't really see it as women against men. I started Heal My Voice so that women could learn to use their voice, that they could feel feelings and express feelings and have a safe space to express those feelings. Because really part of the Me Too movement, what's happening is that women didn't have a safe space to actually share those things that were going on. They lost jobs, they were ridiculed, they were blacklisted. You know, it's like there wasn't a space to actually say it. So mm-hmm. I started Heal My Voice first to give women a place to express feelings that they hadn't felt that they had that space, or that what I had seen growing up was that women would reach a boiling point with anything. Mm-hmm. So they'd like hold it in, and then explode. And then, oh, okay, well, that's okay. Now we go back to hold it in. And so that's one piece of it. It's having a place and a safe space where you feel like you can say what you think, say what you feel, and practice with it, be messy with it. So that was number one. But in the first Heal My Voice book, what I wrote was, this is for women to have a seat at the table and to be able to walk side by side with men. And what I'm seeing in the Me Too movement is men who are getting in touch with their feelings, who are listening, who are starting their own, it's not even movement, it's maybe places to have conversations and recognize where they haven't been listening or why they didn't support a woman who was being abused. So I'll just say it as that. I've worked with women on a lot of different issues. It's trauma, loss, and grief in all areas of their lives. But, you know, sexual abuse was one of those places where there were men in power who used their power to sexually abuse women. That's not all men, but there are men. So yeah. So the men in my world are allies. The men are saying, wow, let's have conversations about this. And for some of the men in my life, they also have been sexually abused. And so there's a space to talk about that too. You know, or they have felt diminished, or they have felt that they couldn't actually express what they were feeling because they didn't want to be one of those types of men.
Yeah.
And so it's actually about, as I have healed more of my voice, and it's an ongoing, I mean, I'm always stretching into something where I'm learning new skills, or I'm learning how to use my voice in different areas. And I don't know, I just have a lot of men who are allies in my life. I love men. I'm not a man hater. Mm-hmm. What I'm looking at is abuse of power. Mm-hmm. And you know, the reality is the more that we have women in power, we're going to see women who abuse power more mm-hmm. also. So this, I don't see it as a gender war. I see it as how can we support each other in really being bringing our gifts forward yeah. that we have to share with the world.
The description that you give of the way women are supposed to behave or react, if you will, is a real paradox, mm-hmm. you know? And then they get criticized for being the emotional side of the species, more so than men, mm-hmm. stereotypically, so that when they go into the corporate world or the political world or whatever other institution, you know, is there, you know, well, no, we don't want a woman because, I mean, a whole issue of temperament in the last election was an issue. And, you know, I'm thinking I'd rather have a woman who has those fluctuations mm-hmm. because they're honest. They're real, you know. Mm-hmm. And no, they're not going to just have one of those days and then push the button. That is not going to happen. And I think that that's really unfortunate that there is that stereotype. But on the other side of it, you have the whole aspect of the, what is it? What are the terms they use? Hawkish and dovish, I think, are the two terms, mm-hmm. you know, and it's like we need a balance. We've got to come find a balance there. So I often wonder, maybe you should have, you know, a male and a female as co, you know, and you have to redo the Constitution maybe, but still, you know, so you have some, they work together in balance with one another, you know, because if the guy can't get it balanced within himself and the gal can't get it balanced within herself, well, then why don't you bring the two together? Then you have the two, you know, the two forces working together to solve the problems that we need solved so we can move forward as a civilization, as a species.
Well, and hopefully we're always learning yeah. and growing together that, you know, and just noticing. And it's not always men and women. It's knowing who has the skill or who has the evolutionary impulse for something. Okay, I'll give you an example mm-hmm. of this. When I was here the last time, we talked about the book Conscious Choices, An Evolutionary Woman's Guide to Life.
Right.
And that came out of an evolutionary woman's retreat in which there was a woman who stood up and said, there's so much wisdom here, we should all write a book and include our stories about our evolutionary journey. And another woman stood up and said, I'm a publisher, I'll publish that book. And something in me went zing mm-hmm. in my body, like zing, oh, I want to write. I've been writing in my journals for 20 years. I want to write something. And I was on the committee for that book where we were sending out an invitation to women who'd been in the retreats, send us your stories. But it was more than send us stories. It was we had weekly meetings where we talked about it. We talked about the feelings that were coming up. We did gentle reading for each other. We did things to coax the story out of each other. But what happened in this committee that I was on was that my natural abilities started to emerge in this committee where I became the mentor and the midwife of the stories. I began to have dreams at night about women's voices and how to really help them express themselves and go deep with these stories. So what happened in that round circle, instead of the two women who had started Evolutionary Women becoming the leaders, or instead of the publisher becoming the leader, they turned to me and said, you're the one who has the impulse. You're the one who has the next steps. And if we could start to look at each other that way, that there are men and women at the table, and that we start to look at who has some level of skill or knowing, that because that's what it was really happening.
Yeah.
I had a knowing just based on something that was in my cells that was waking up. It wasn't based on experience of having written a book before. I had homeschooled my kids, but I really had not been someone who helped a woman write a story before.
Mm-hmm.
But that just started to wake up in me. And I believe that when we're all listening to each other and we create space for those dialogues to happen, that our natural abilities will begin to wake up to what we have to offer at that time. And so sometimes, I mean, I say an empowered woman's voice, an empowered woman knows when to listen, she knows when to speak, and she knows when to stand up and shout her message from the mountaintop. And listening has just as much value as standing up and shouting your message yeah. from the mountaintop. It's knowing which one in every situation would benefit.
I have to say that I have done a number of interviews in the last couple of years that have been geared specifically towards women. And somewhere during the interview, I start to feel a little uncomfortable. It's like, okay, I understand the subject is very important, but am I the right person to be sitting here asking these questions? Because I'm a guy. I don't understand. Unfortunately, the stereotype goes that guys don't understand women any more than women understand men. Mm-hmm. You know, there's that whole thing. And they barely understand themselves, you know, which is really very frustrating. And yet, okay, but I'm also a member of the species. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to make it through to the other side, wherever, whatever that is. And hopefully, you know, because again, my frustrations when I was dating were that a lot of the gals that I came across were damaged, you know, and I used to get angry at other men for damaging these women because I had to pick up the pieces and I didn't want to do that. I wanted to establish a relationship, but I had to work through all the fear and the angst and all of those things that had been heaped upon them through that abuse, you know, whatever that abuse was. What was it that I heard the other day? And this was from a more conservative guest on a program who made the comment about sticks and stones will break your bones, but words will never hurt you. I can attest to the fact that that's a lie. It's a falsehood that words do hurt. Talk to us about the power of words.
Wow. Oh, well, I didn't even know that's where you were going. So I'm going, okay, the power of words.
Why is it important for us? Okay. I understand the First Amendment gives us the freedom of speech. I get that. And at the same time, there's a responsibility, taking responsibility for the words that come out of our mouths. Because they have power. Can you address
it
from that perspective?
So here's the thing that was bubbling as you were leading into that question. First of all, you know, it's an individual choice about what is your intention for how you want to be living your life. Mm-hmm. What is the way that you want to walk through the world? And I would challenge all men and all women to spend time in self-reflection. And to me, the self-reflection is what leads us to the power of our words. It's really getting in touch with how do I feel about things? How do I want to be in the world? How do I want to live in this life? And, you know, the power of, we don't have control over what someone says to us. But if you have been told something repeatedly throughout mm-hmm. your childhood, then you're going to begin to believe that. And so the power in self-reflection is to get in touch with those words that are actually holding you back, something that someone else told you, mm-hmm. something that happened in another situation. And I believe that in self-reflecting and really dissecting those words, that you begin to reclaim the power and step into greater leadership in your life. Mm-hmm. Those are, mm-hmm. you know, that mm-hmm. you begin to cultivate your own inner authority. There's, I've been reading a book by Carol Gilligan, who wrote, the book I've been reading is The Birth of Pleasure, and she wrote this book in 2002. She really studied and I'm not even sure, she talks about it a little bit in that book, but it's like the age of four or five that boys begin to disconnect from their voices and they begin to take on a certain persona mm-hmm. of who they think they're supposed to be in the world. Girls, it happens around adolescence. It's like 9, 10, and 11. And that for girls, they have this innate knowing about things. They just know things mm-hmm. intuitively. They don't have words to defend, describe, to teach someone. They just know things. Mm-hmm. And it's around that age that that they receive messages that it's that doesn't have value, or that you have to have reasons for things. And so that part of their voice starts to get shut down. And so what it happens for both boys and girls is that we really lose that connection to our inner authority, our inner voice that's telling us how, what choices and decisions to make, how to live our lives. And so, I mean, we're all broken, you know? Mm-hmm, so it's mm-hmm. like, let's all just, I mean, I have daily practices and I'm in a world where I feel safe and I feel like I have an expression, and I've learned how to expand the range of feelings that I can feel, so that if someone's angry at me, I can fully receive like what's going on. I can listen. I don't have to take it on as mine. I can be in a conversation. And that cultivation of your inner authority is what leads all of us to be able to do that, where we don't have to react. We don't have to defend. We don't have to say, I didn't do it. You know, it's like, okay, I'm just having feelings, like, or I've had an experience. And so for us to be able to actually witness and listen to each other. I had a conversation with a man about a month ago when I was in Seattle. A friend of mine was saying to me, why don't women ask for what they want? You know, it was like, and I listened, and you know, he was just frustrated. And of course, this had to do with his wife in that moment. But, it, you know, I said, so is this a general question? Is this a specific? And he's saying, well, I really, you know, again, he's going back to your observation of dating women. It's like, you know, why don't women ask for what they want? And so I listened and didn't really respond at that point. And 2 days later, when I saw him again, I said, I've been thinking a lot about your question. Do you really want to know?
Yeah, don't ask a question if you're not prepared right. to receive the answer.
Right. And he said, oh, I'm scared. He kind of backed up. And I said, well, here's the thing. I didn't tell you because I didn't really feel that you really wanted to know what that was.
Right.
So I'd say that's where we are in the world, is do you really want to know what's behind the curtain? Do you really want to know what it's been like? You know, and I don't say this from a victim point, mm-hmm. but to just get a perspective on how women have been holding back mm-hmm. because they haven't had these safe spaces to actually share something. And when I'm talking about a safe space, I'm not talking about like, oh, I just need it to be all like quiet and gentle. No, I want to be challenged. I like it. I want to be challenged mm-hmm. in conversation.
Yeah.
But a safe space is when, for example, a woman who's being sexually abused by her uncle comes and tells the family, and they tell her, no, that's not, that can't be, and you misunderstood or whatever. And so that wasn't a safe space. Mm-hmm. That was actually, she was told that what she had experienced wasn't true, that she couldn't talk about it, that she just had to put up with that. You know, and the stuff that's rising, I mean, we do need to get it up and out. Mm. And here's the thing, too. I love being in dialogue with men who want to share what they're feeling, what they're experiencing, what they're thinking, what their ideas are. It goes both ways.
Yeah.
And I'm in those conversations, you know. Heal My Voice has been primarily with women. But I did a men's group this summer to just talk about what was holding men the men had creative projects. Someone wanted to write a book. Someone was writing music. You know, it was, well, what's holding you back? Yeah. What's stopping you from doing that? And so I'm all in. Humanity.
Yeah. Humanity. Exactly.
Bring it on.
Exactly. Andrea Hyden's my guest. We're talking about website in particular, healmyvoice.org, and we encourage you to check that out. We will also be linked to the website, Empowering Women to Step into Greater Leadership, healmyvoice.org. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, and we will be right back in just one moment.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story. We are here with Andrea Hyland, and we're talking about Heal My Voice. Healmyvoice.org is the website, and of course, we're also talking about this one particular book. I do like the title of it, An Evolutionary Woman's Guide to Life. Sometimes I would love to have evolutionary men. I'm not seeing too many of them around, especially in positions of power. Not very evolved. You know, you talked earlier in the last segment, or actually late in the last segment, about that comment, why don't women say what they mean, you know, or ask for what they want, that kind of thing. And I'm familiar with the whole concept of the negotiation in business. But I'm thinking, God, what a waste of time to sit there and I don't really, this is behind the scenes, I don't want the moon, but I'm going to ask for the moon, because what I really want is somewhere about a mile above the Earth's surface. And so what we'll do is we'll spend the next 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12 days, weeks, months negotiating and working to where I really want it to be, 2 miles above the Earth's surface. I want the moon. Well, we can't give you the moon, but what we can give you is this. Well, no. And I keep ramping it down. Why can't you just ask for what you want? Straightforward, I want 2 miles above the Earth's surface. That's all I want. And stand fast and say, that's what I want. Can you give that to me? And if you can't, all right. That's in business. Politics, it's the same thing. It's that ongoing negotiation. It's like, but it's so much wasted time and energy. In relationships, we do the same thing, okay? And I can understand, you know, laying out of, I mean, case in point, we had a vacation. And in 2016, my wife wanted to rent an RV, take the dog with us, and go this place and that and the other. We had a wonderful vacation where we went to Yosemite. I don't know if you're familiar with the Majestic Hotel and the Bracebridge dinner.
Mm,
oh, what a performance.
Nice.
What an experience. I would highly recommend it. Well, the long and the short of it is we drove the Volvo and we stayed at a lodge and we drove into the Bracebridge dinner, you know, at the Majestic. And then we went up to Nevada City and we were gone for a week, 1,000-mile trip. It was incredible. I can't imagine it being as incredible if we had taken an RV, because I start thinking about all the logistics to do with that. Could we have actually driven an RV into the Brace, to the Majestic? And there was snow everywhere, you know, and so on and so on and so on. I mean, but that's a different kind of negotiation in one sense. But maybe it's the same thing. I don't know. Because I knew I didn't want to take an RV and dealing with all of the logistics surrounding that and the dog. I'm not going to leave the dog in the RV. How is he going to stay warm? Because it was cold up there. I mean, there's snow everywhere. What about that whole aspect? Should that be a natural, normal part of the process of, shall we say, negotiations within a relationship? Because that's what we're talking about here in terms of humanity, is the relationships between men and women, men and men, women and women, and so forth, just coexisting together, or should we just straight out say, look, I just want to take the car and do this and that and the other, end of story. That's all I want. And then hope that the other person will come to my level.
Well, it's, I guess it's, do you want connection with another human being, or do you want to just go do your thing and you want someone who just hops in the car and does your thing with you? Or do you actually want a connection and a collaboration? You know, so I wouldn't say that there's a right or a wrong. It's what is it that you want? What does your partner want? So, and it takes me back, you know, your exploration there, it takes me back to what I really feel is that we've missed along the way. And that is, and again, I hope things are changing. I know things changed in my household with my daughters as I was raising them. They have stronger voices than I had. But it's, we learn things in childhood by practicing and by failing and succeeding. And how many kids are just told to sit at the table and not talk, or you're a child and you don't have a voice here? Or I know as a that when I would finally try to put some opinion on something as a teenager, that I'd come out all messy and emotional and everything else, because there was just never a place of having dialogue about anything. What do you think about this? We're not taught in our school systems to think, to question. We're taught to memorize, and, you know, and there's like, there's so many limitations on how we really haven't used how to use this tool, which is our voice, our feelings, our thoughts in community with each other. And so that's part of it, is that we don't know how to use them. So we become adults and we're trying to be in this dynamic where let's just say women and men see things differently. You know, it's not as black and white as that. It's not as general as that. But maybe we come at things a little bit different because of our gender, the way we're wired. And then we try to be in this relationship together, but we're coming at it from a different place. So I will tell you that every time I'm in a retreat or a group with women, there's always a point in a weekend where a woman will stand up and say, but what about the men? And so women are thinking during this weekend where they're taking a retreat for themselves, where they're in community with women, where they're talking about what they want to create in their lives, what they want to, how they want to build things, whatever. And there's always a point where we're enough, you know, we're excited enough about, oh, the possibilities of what we could do in the world. But what about the men? And the what about the men is, if I grow to my full potential, then the man I'm with will be left behind. Women think about those things. I'm not saying that's necessarily true. But we think about it. We think about ourselves, our individual selves, as in relation to others.
Yeah,
it's just a natural way that we are wired. So the idea that there would be, you know, I did a lot of road trip traveling for with my kids and with my husband, and I was always the organizer of that. But the way that I organized it was by asking everyone what they wanted to do or what was exciting to them. And then I took all of those ideas and I made a plan so that I could logistically meet as many of their needs and desires as possible. And sometimes, I mean, my core desire in that was to spend time with my family and go on a road trip. But was I really looking at, was I really putting my desire into it?
Yeah.
You know, because I was looking at what everybody else's desire was. They're great memories and all that. I had a great time. But that part where I've turned it down a little bit to not just claim what it is that I want or how I want to experience it. So.
Well, and that actually opens it up in terms of my example of negotiating, thinking, okay, what is it that I really wanted? And I wanted to have a really fun, stress-free trip. And so I'm actually kind of excited about prospects for future gatherings in that respect, or trips and vacations. But that's my main goal. I don't, you know, in one sense, I do care about the accessories, the accoutrements, and so forth. But at the same time, I really just want to have a stress-free trip. And we did that. As a matter of fact, one of the two things that we said, number one, we were not going to eat at any fast food restaurants, and we didn't.
Uh-huh.
And number two was that we were not going to be slaves to any kind of a timeline. Now, granted, the first night we had to get to our lodge outside of Yosemite, which was fine. We got there plenty of time. And then, of course, the Bracebridge dinner was at a set time as well. Beyond that, the door was wide open, and it was fabulous. We got on the 99, for example, out of Yosemite to head to Nevada City, and traffic was unbelievable. It was in the late morning, mm-hmm. and it was just, but you know, we said our stress level, we could feel it going up. Get off at the next turn. I'm going to redo GPS, no highways. And we started weaving through farm fields. That was incredible. It was, and so, yeah, we accomplished that goal. A wonderful vacation that I now look back on with immense fondness. I do the same thing with certain parts of, many parts, and I'm sure maybe you do too, I don't know, of my first marriage. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of wonderful times, and it wasn't that it was a horrible 15 years, and I don't know why the hell I stayed so long. Obviously, I stayed for 15 years. There was something there, you know. And when you were, if you were to ask someone about their, I have two nieces, my second oldest sister's nieces cannot get enough of Disneyland. There's something about it that they are just locked into, right? Mm-hmm. But I bet you if they were really honest about the trips that they took, as much fun as that, oh, it was fantastic. There is still the other side of that. Well, you know, the line to the Matterhorn was 12 miles long, and it took us 3 days to get there, and this and that and the other. But, you know, overall, yeah, if your experience was 80 or 90% fantastic, hey, that 20 to 10% of not so fantastic doesn't mean a whole lot, which is kind of nice.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's what we have to look at, you know, when we're talking about these relationships, when we're talking about what kind of a connection that we want, what kind of a relationship we want, whether it's an intimate relationship, whether it's business, whether it's political, whether it's whatever it is. What about our relationship with, in the same context here, what about when you're working with women in particular, because mm-hmm. that's what we're talking about here primarily,
sure.
How about your relationship with God, with the divine, with the higher self, if you will. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, it's all connected with your inner authority, your connection to something greater than yourself. I'd say all the women who are in programs with me know that there is a basis of spirituality, and they can call it whatever they want to. They can call it nature and it's not like they have to, but chances are they wouldn't be in that field with me if they didn't have some belief in something
mm-hmm.
that's greater. And for some, we call it universal intelligence that
right.
we're connected to, or God, or Source, or Spirit.
A rose by any other name.
Yeah. But I think that at the fundamental thing, I just want to circle back a little bit about what you're talking about, which is about a higher power, or it's about the consciousness in which we're living our lives
mm-hmm.
and the awareness around that. So is it like, well, I just want to be in touch with what I'm feeling and what I want and my thoughts, and I just want to go ahead and do what I want to do. That there are people who are deciding that's how they want to live. But if you want to live in connection with other people, then there is a place of slowing down and having conversations and getting to the root of what it is that you want. I mean, it'd be interesting to have a conversation with your nieces about Disneyland, Disney World, what it is that really, like, what is it about that for them? Because at the core, at the root of it, there's some intention, there's some thing that's underneath that they, you know, it's like every time I see Mickey Mouse, I feel really loved. You know, and it's like,
yeah.
Okay, it's like they connect to love when they're there. Maybe they connect to their imagination or their creativity, or they see that the world is a fun place, or, you know, that there are these things. Because when you talked about the trip with your wife, you had there were these intentions. So the specifics, you can kind of work out what it is. But if you don't know what the underlying stuff is, so that's the raising of your consciousness. That's the raising of awareness. That's going, what is the experience that I'm really looking for here? And then everything else that happens, the long lines, the, you know, the flat tire that means that somebody stops and you meet them and have a conversation. And then you find out, oh, my God, yeah, oh, here's my next radio show guest.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, but if you don't have this deep core understanding, which is self-reflection. For me, it's writing and creativity, getting in touch with that, cultivating that, and then deciding what kind of connection do I want with people. All right, and I know I'm just like going all over the place with this conversation.
No, that's okay.
But we're, you know, it's touching into this deep place. One of the things that you'll also hear people talk about is that they feel lonely and they feel disconnected. Well, who are they disconnected from?
Yeah.
What are they disconnected from? Because I will tell you, I have lived on the road, house-free, for 4.5 years in different places in the world. And what I have found is that I can find a connection with someone anywhere in the world in a moment. It can be in the grocery store. It can be, you know, it's like here, we're looking in each other's eyes as we're having this conversation.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that soul connection, but that's because I've cultivated that with myself.
Yeah.
And that, when I talk about healing my voice, it's going in over and over again to find that core place inside of me that has had a lot of experiences, who's had trauma, loss, and grief. First half of my book is actually 14 stories around things where loss of a husband, loss of a son, loss of a brother, a life-threatening illness, an eviction. You know, those are just experiences in life. But it's what did I learn about myself and about my connection to others while I was in that, moving from a challenge to a triumph? What tools did I use along the way? Because we all have those tools too.
That seems to be the message I'm getting from many of my guests, is the inquiry about self, the introspection, if you will. And that if we don't do that work, there is no evolutionary process, because that has to start with us. And again, I'm going to forget who actually said this, but you know, if you want peace in the world, be the peace that you want to see.
Yeah.
I've often heard it also said that it is not, when people talk about world peace, it's not about peaceful environments that we want to create. It's peaceful people. I know that when we've had talked with Greg Braden, he's often talked, on and on about the difference between competition and cooperation, and that competition does not foster peace. It really doesn't. Cooperation does. It doesn't mean that, you know, you can't have that sense of achievement and fulfillment in that regard, you know, striving for something. It also starts to set aside a little bit of our individuality. It's like, okay, yeah, I am an individual and I have all of these wonderful rights, inalienable rights and human rights and civil rights and this and that and the other. But at the same time, I'm also part of a collective, of a community, whether it's a small community, be it Santa Barbara, whether it's a larger community, state of California, country, United States, planetary community. Of seven, that's a heck of a big community, 7.6 billion people, you know. it's hard to get enough folding chairs for everybody. there has to come a point where we say, without getting rid of the individual, because you can't, you know, the the total is greater than the sum of its parts. Mm-hmm. We have to start looking at community. We have to start looking at the aspect of the whole. And what is it that we as a collective, what is it that we want to achieve? Where do we want to be tomorrow?
Right.
Because I find it hard to believe that this is where we wanted to be today, because it's not a lot of fun.
All right.
There's not a lot of peace in it.
I really want to jump in and talk about peace.
Go.
Because this is one of the things, and, you know, just to let the listeners know, I just want you to understand where I'm coming from and which when I talk about this, because the first half of my book I've shared an evolutionary woman's journey. What is it like to have all of this adversity and challenge in your life? And then how do you come through the triumph? But in the second part, I talk about the 10 Heal My Voice projects that were 9-month programs, women coming together to talk about a topic. And one of the topics was peace. And let me tell you what we learned about peace. When you start to focus on peace, what actually shows up first is the chaos that you have in your life.
Mm.
So to cultivate peace, you actually have to be willing to go in and clean your body system of all the chaos, all the anger, and be willing to do a regular house cleaning on that. It doesn't just happen once. It's like things trigger us, things outrage us, you know, like maybe politics. happen in the world that we don't agree with people about, and we have feelings about them. But this idea that we're all going to be going around going, Om Mani Padme Om, you know, it's like it's not going to happen.
No, no, no.
And that's not the evolutionary process, mm-mm, actually. Mm-mm. Evolution talks about breakdowns for breakthroughs.
Mm-hmm.
So to break down, you're actually going to have to look at something and feel it and look at it with fresh eyes. So what we found in the 9 months that women spent together focused on writing a story about something peaceful, in the peace in their lives. It was Harmonic Voices, True Stories by Women on a Path to Peace, is that you have to be willing to feel all the feelings. And you have to be willing to look at where you're actually not living from that peaceful place. And what is that? Maybe you're angry at your fourth grade science teacher, and something happens and you're now 60 and something happens and it just triggers that memory and you're angry because you've never dealt with what that anger was, or you never had a place to do anything with that anger. Well, then feel those feelings first. Write about them. Beat a drum. Go for a run. Something. Feel those feelings. Acknowledge it. Hey, anger, I see you. I feel you. I remember that. That was a terrible situation. I wish I could have done something differently, but you know, I'm going to feel it, feel it, feel it. Clean it out of your system. And then go find something that brings peace and joy and love into your life. Replace it with something else. But don't deny that it's there. And that's where I think we've been kind of messed up around peace. Like, oh, I'm just going to be peace. Yeah, and then you're like, rah!
Andrea Hyland, I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the program, sharing with us, of course, about the work that you're doing through HealMyVoice.com and org, as well as the book, The Evolutionary Woman's Guide to Life. And we're grateful that you were able to join us in studio here. And hopefully we'll have you back again soon to talk more about this, because obviously there's a lot more to discuss.
Great. Well, thank you. It was really fun. And let's not make it another 8 years. Let's do it sooner.
let's do it much sooner. We'll do it again this year, I promise you.
Okay.
I want to also let our listeners know that if you are joining us for the radio broadcast, that broadcast is only 50 minutes, but we definitely went longer than that. So you need to go to the podcast locations, which are SoundCloud, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, Stitcher, RichardDugan.com, the radio show's page as well. If you'd like to support this broadcast, we have a PayPal account that is set up and a link to that. And so if you're able to do so, we are grateful for any support that you can give us. So thank you so much in advance, or we'll take energetic support as well. Again, my guest has been Andrea Hyland, and we're talking, of course, we've been talking about HealMyVoice.com, as well as the evolutionary guide an evolutionary woman's guide to life. And again, thank you so much for joining us here on the program. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.
You know, just like, comes out, I'm so mad and everything. But it's, don't deny that, you know, I mean, there are things that are happening now. The Me Too movement, Black Lives Matter, these movements are actually calling us all to look and go back within and look at our deeper beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
Look at how we may be adding to the problem, the challenge of someone else.
Yeah.
And feel those feelings. So it's not about beating yourself up because you had this, oh my gosh, I didn't even realize I was unconscious there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now that you're conscious, make a different choice and start living your life in a different way.
Yeah.
But that's how we actually get peace on earth, is when we're all taking responsibility for our own healing and making different choices and having different behaviors.
I think that's one of the perspectives that also needs to be taken on a national level. I think about this country's history, and I also think about what I have spoken with individuals who are from Germany, for example, and they, I think this is a fair statement of these particular individuals anyway, they embrace the total reality of the history of Germany, let's say going back 100 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
They acknowledge what has happened. Whereas in this country, there are those who are upset beyond belief that there's a group of people in this country who want to continually dredge up the dark side of American history. And I'm sitting here thinking, wait a minute, but that's part of our history. That's part of why we are where we are today, both the good and the bad of today. And what you're talking about is exactly the same thing on an individual basis. If I do not embrace the dark side of me along with the light side, how am I ever going to come to peace? And it isn't, and it's what you just said. It's not, oh my God, I did that when I was 12 years old. And oh, that just, I guess I'm right up there with Harvey Weinstein and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. No, it's just acknowledging you've learned from it. You've grown from it. You're a bigger, better, wiser, hopefully humbler person because of that.
Yeah.
Look at the lessons you've learned. I mean, I think about the struggles I had to go through in the last couple of years here. I got to a point in my life where I was actually able to say to this individual who I've never met, but I've been influenced by, thank you, teacher, for teaching me how not to behave. Then the next step was, I forgive you. And more importantly, I forgive myself for allowing myself to be drawn into that whole da-da-da. And yeah, that was part of, and it's part of the reason why my blood pressure has gone through the roof sometimes, you know, because I allow myself to get charged up over all of these things that really I have no control over. Again, it goes back to the only control I have is over my reaction to those things that I have no control over.
Yeah.
For example, Highway 99. I had no control over the traffic, but I did have control over my reaction to the traffic.
Yes.
Get off, recalibrate, continue on.
Absolutely. Or even pause in the moment and say, what is good about this?
Yeah.
Maybe it's that you get to turn to your wife and look into her eyes and just have a moment of connection.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you get to reconsider the music that you have playing or the radio or something. It's like, take it as a pause. So
yeah, that's interesting you bring that up, because I've often wanted to get in touch with some of the, both on the left and the right in terms of politics on radio and television, and say, okay, if you're on the left, I want you to spend the next program saying nothing but good things about the people you've been bashing for the last 10 years.
Mm.
And on the right, same thing. I want you to spend at least one program, one segment, complimenting the other side that you have been belittling and name-calling you know, for the last 10 years. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Just try it. See what happens. Because my perspective is that when you get into that mode of attacking the other side, you do nothing more than throw gasoline on the fire, and we don't move forward.
Mm-hmm.
We don't make any progress. The question I ask is, how is that helping us solve the problems that we're facing today? The
right.
challenges. How does that help in a relationship when you criticize the other? I have to tell you, I have never, even with my first wife going through a divorce, and even my present wife, you know, you see on TV shows how the husband will maybe make a side comment about the wife's driving, cooking, whatever it is, you know, mm-hmm. loves her and so forth, but he'll just make that little snide comment.
Mm-hmm.
I don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
About her to other people or in her presence or to her.
Yeah.
You know, first of all, I know how sensitive she is about that and mm-hmm. will feel attacked. All right. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to go there.
Yeah.
And it's not, I'm in relationship with this person.
Right. Why not look for ways to lift her up
yeah.
instead of take her down? Because actually the things that are irritating you are just, they're just a preference that you have.
Exactly.
You know.
And that's what we need to be about doing. And that's, I think, a beautiful thing about healmyvoice.org. Healmyvoice.org
yep.
is
either
the website. Yep,
either one, .com.
Oh, .com gets you there too.
Both. Yeah.
Okay. We encourage you to go there. And also, check out this particular work, which again has been out for a while, An Evolutionary Woman's Guide to Life. And in 20, what are your feelings, observations, awareness, if you will, or intuitive thoughts about the coming year, 2019? Anything come to mind? I mean, do you feel optimistic? I mean, just in a general sense, with your own personal life,
yeah.
with Heal My Voice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel, you know, it's interesting. 2018 for me was a year of making some decisions to stop doing certain things in my business. And then I'm working with women now who are writing their own books and songs and creative projects or whatever, whereas the last 10 years I've worked with women to all put a story into a book. And I'm optimistic about where we're going. I feel, oh gosh, how can I even describe what I'm feeling right now? It's like all the breakdowns that happened in 2018 are like the sidewalk just being broken up, and mm-hmm. there's like green shoots coming up. And that's what I'm seeing, are the green shoots that are coming up. I feel we're all in dialogue around creating ideas on where are we going next. I mean, look at all right, I'll just say politics. Mm-hmm. I am a Democrat, but that doesn't mean that I see everything from a Democratic point of view. I feel like I believe in humanity. If there could be a political group that it's like, I believe in humanity.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in connection with human beings and looking how we can all work on that. We're all in this together. I do believe in making the world a better place, but I start with myself. And what I see is that there's this level of waking up where people are waking up to really what they want to offer in the world, who they are. So I see people redefining their businesses. I'm seeing them deciding that they want some sort of creative expression in mm-hmm. their life where mm-hmm. they can express their feelings. I see people leaning into political conversations. So we do have more Democrats in office now, but that's not the end all. That's like, okay, now how do we support making choices and decisions that are based on the greater good and humanity?
Yeah.
How do we look at how we're treating people
yeah.
in the world? And I'm surrounding myself with people who are asking those questions and looking at how are they going to step into that. So I am
yeah.
very optimistic for where we're going.
Yeah.
It's
interesting too that, you know, you used a particular analogy in reference to to this. And I've even heard this from a metaphysical perspective, that without rebirth, without death, without destruction, there can be no rebirth. That's just
absolutely
the way that it is in this universe. Mm-hmm. That is, you know, you see planetary bodies or bodies that are moving around in the universe colliding together, and that collision then creates something new.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and sometimes we lose sight of that.
Yeah,
you know that's just what it takes, and it's kind of frustrating because, I mean, for myself, I've had it up to here with the trauma drama. I don't want to play that game anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that to me is somewhat separate from the whole birth and death and birth and death and birth and death process of the
mm-hmm.
universe.
Mm-hmm.
There is something different about that as compared to the trauma drama where one group is claiming victimhood
mm-hmm.
because of what they did to us. What they did to us. Things are terrible because of what they did to us. And it's like, they are us.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you think about it really from a broader perspective, they didn't do this to you. You allowed it to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You allowed it to happen. You know, and there are a lot of different explanations as to how that came about. But that needs to be set aside too, because it still isn't taking responsibility. It's like you're taking blame. You know, you're blaming them or you're blaming you. There's a difference between blame and responsibility, isn't there?
Well, yeah, I think there's that. It goes back to the whole self-reflection thing. It's like take personal responsibility for your actions and choices that you've made in the world. But then learn things about other people. You know, during the presidential election in 2016, I was posting things on my Facebook page about things that I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't posting things that slandered someone else,
right,
or put someone else down. I put things that I believed. And that created, first, sometimes there would be a kickback from
mm-hmm.
that, you know, people yelling at me
yeah.
about how I'm wrong. But I would always come back to, well, why do you feel the way, what do you believe in?
Yeah.
And what is your how do you see that? And I'll just give one example, is that I do believe that we need more gun regulation. We need to look at the licensing for guns, things like that.
Right,
And I had someone who was telling me I was against the Second Amendment. I said, that's not true. That's not what it is. But what is it for you? And she said, my husband and I live in the country, and I feel really vulnerable there, and I feel safer when there's a gun in the house. And so I really understood, like I was just able to see from her perspective
yeah.
that that's what makes sense to her.
Yeah.
And so when we can listen to each other also, we may not agree with each other, but when you really get to the core of it versus the just telling someone they're wrong or somebody did something to them, it's like, hey, if there's a message I've wanted to get out in my book, which the book that just came out in July is called Heal My Voice, An Evolutionary Woman's Journey. And that, my message is, okay, you have an adversity, you have a challenge. Now, what are you going to do with it?
Mm-hmm.
And I showed personal experiences of how I had a challenge and what I did.
Yeah.
To heal or find strength, or what were the gifts that were in it.
Yeah.
And in the second part, it's about conversations. What are the conversations that would be really helpful for us all to be having
yeah.
right now? You know, about leadership, about peace, about love, about fear, about empowerment,
yeah.
and why those conversations are important. Right. Because to me, that is actually the pathway yeah. forward.
Intent. You mentioned that earlier, mm-hmm. and this woman's intent was not to own a gun. Her intent was to feel safe.
Exactly.
And that's where we're coming from. And that's that specific issue. But again,
mm-hmm.
that's where we need to be coming from, is what is our intent?
Yes.
In pursuing this line of questioning, this line of dialogue, or this line of verbiage. And it goes back to my comment earlier about the First Amendment, about the freedom of speech, let alone religion. You have a responsibility. Mm-hmm. You know, just because you can, this goes to the question that I put out, especially when it comes to bioengineering, for example. Just because you can, does that mean you should say this, do this? You know, because there is a law of physics that says for every action, and to me, a verbiage is an action still, because that's energy going out. For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. Mm-hmm. So when it comes back to you, and you gave a very good example of that, you put out with a specific intent, mm-hmm. and it's not your responsibility how somebody interprets it,
right.
But then you were able to dialogue through that medium and understand where she was coming from,
mm-hmm.
which is a huge difference, tones down the energy. My car accident. At the end of it, with the police officer there, I walked up to the gentleman who was at fault. Mm-hmm. I extended my hand and I said, I'm glad that we're both okay. Now let's go out and make it a better day than it has been, because I'm going to.
Yes.
And he had his arms folded in front of him, put him down, shook my hand, laughed a little bit and said, yeah, I'll do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it just... because this is a small town and I may come across him again somewhere along the way, and I don't want that situation being something that, you know, it's like certain words that have certain negative charge to them. I don't want his seeing me to have that same impact, and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
How is that serving us? You know, so yeah, intent.
Well, that is the intent, and it's also a way for you to do your own analysis on a regular basis of what is my intention on how I want to live my life.
Mm-hmm.
Who do I want to be in the world? And are the actions and are the way that I'm actually living and the thing that I'm doing, is that actually in alignment with what my intent is? And mm-hmm. so it's like, you know, I'm going to go throughout the world and find ways to connect with people and, you know, and uplift, let's just say. And so I get to do that. And so if somebody says, oh, you know, humbug towards you, you know, then it's like, okay, that's their reaction. But my intent is to actually uplift and get back into that place where I'm connected to putting love out in the world.
Yeah.
And if I'm feeling the humbug, then I get to go into my place of writing it out or meditating and just going, what is that inside of me? Why am I feeling that right now? Doing my own self-reflection, doing my own practices, so that I can rise back into alignment with what my intent is.
Yeah.
That's how you get out of victimhood. You have your intent.
Yeah.
You acknowledge the feelings that you're having. You take personal responsibility for those feelings and do something with them. And then you raise into that intent again.
And by virtue of asking that very question, that is introspective, because otherwise you're just flailing around with the energy just going all over the place, reacting to whatever's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And the moment you ask that, what is my intent, you've instantly shifted to introspection, and that process begins. So it's not that hard.
No.
Just remember.
Although it is hard at sometimes, I just want to acknowledge. It's not like I'm like all, you know, I mean,
right.
Because if you say, I want to walk around as a peaceful, as someone who spreads peace in the world, then you also have to look at when you're not feeling that peace. You
granted,
know?
That's
so
true
it's
too.
Like, okay, let's go in and do a little Roto-Rooter. Let's go in.
And then, of course, again, is acknowledging that shadow side, that dark side of ourselves.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Very, very, very good stuff. Mm-hmm. Andrea Hyland, I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the program, sharing with us, of course, about the work that you're doing through HealMyVoice.com and org, as well as the book, The Evolutionary Woman's Guide to Life. And we're grateful that you were able to join us in studio here. And hopefully we'll have you back again soon to talk more about this, because obviously there's a lot more to discuss.
great. Well, thank you. It was really fun. And let's not make it another 8 years. Let's do it sooner.
let's do it much sooner. We'll do it again this year, I promise you.
Okay.
I want to also let our listeners know that if you are joining us for the radio broadcast, that broadcast is only 50 minutes, but we definitely went longer than that. So you need to go to the podcast locations, which are SoundCloud, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, Stitcher, RichardDugan.com, the radio show's page as well. If you'd like to support this broadcast, we have a PayPal account that is set up and a link to that. And so if you're able to do so, we are grateful for any support that you can give us. So thank you so much in advance, or we'll take energetic support as well. Again, my guest has been Andrea Hyland, and we're talking, of course, we've been talking about HealMyVoice.com. as well as the evolutionary guide an evolutionary woman's guide to life. And again, thank you so much for joining us here on the program. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.